Hey team, this is LDR welcoming you back beyond the walls with Team Real Vision. This week, we get to continue our series of going beyond the walls of racism in America. So lace up your shoes tight because you are about to be taken to church by two incredible human beings, Kendrick Ketter-Chavis and Bernie Anderson. And I have to brag, team, I get to work with these people. Kendra is not only a senior church advisor on the East Coast with World Vision, she is a church planting co-pastor of Capacity Church in Nashville, Tennessee, with her husband, Travis. She has her Master's of Divinity and a Certificate in Black Church Studies from Princeton Theological Seminary, and she's also the creative director of Margin to Table, a new platform making space for marginalized modern voices of faith. Bernie Anderson is our East Coast Director of Church and Ministry Partnerships. He's an accomplished author, teacher, and preacher, as well as an ordained Seventh-day Adventist minister for over two decades. Friends, open up that stride, enjoy your run today, and listen in as Kendra and Bernie talk about what it looks like to have endurance in our lives and in our faith. Well, as you know, as people are listening right now, they are moving their feet, maybe for the first time, training for a marathon or a half marathon. Maybe they're actually still even debating what they're doing right now. They might be at one of those moments, like, what am I doing with my life? And when I think of you two, I think of people who are on the journey, who are doing the work with Christ, with others, and in all shapes and fashions and in all facets. I'm excited to sit with you and listen to you about what does endurance mean to you in life and on the journey? And what might you want to share with our runners as they're moving their feet today?
I think it's one of our favorite pastors of all time, right? Eugene Peterson, who talks about the long discipline in the same direction. That's long, always stuck. Is that right?
The long obedience in the same
long
direction.
Long obedience. I'm sorry. I think I insert words in there, but it all speaks to the theme of endurance, right? Mm-hmm. In this, how do we maintain through it? And one of the most significant things as an endurance, as a runner, you're thinking about endurance. How do I last? How do I go the distance? And at the same time, it was just this sense of, there are the doubts in your mind. Can I go on? Can I continue doing this? And it's the same when we think about this journey of addressing the issue of inequality and racial injustice. And for Black people, Black and brown people of color, there's a collective, there's this journey, and it gets to be too much almost. At times it's overwhelming, at times it's just tiring, mm-hmm. and exhausting. And then you have voices that totally invalidate the journey, that say, oh, what are you thinking about? What are you talking about? What does it even matter? You know, and then that just adds to the burden of exhaustion as well. But the idea of endurance is so vital to this, because we have to continue on. In fact, it's no way to avoid it. You're going to be a part. This is part of the journey and part of the experience. So, and then there's the idea of rest along the way. Can I recuperate so that I can get back to having a voice in the journey? A good voice, not an angry voice. I don't want to descend into anger and resentment and bitterness, because when you're tired, that's when you do that sort of thing, right? Mm-hmm. I want to be this voice that is passionate and energetic in the right, loving way to the community. But that's my quick thought on endurance. Kendra?
Yeah, for sure. So we, one of the things we've been chatting a little bit about is trying to incorporate that idea that Bernie, mentioned of rest, right? So all of this is, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon, and it's long. And now, especially as more people add themselves, like hop into the race, right? It's important for every one of us to know just the role that rest is playing in this. So this isn't something, though I'm excited about the new energy around the issue of anti-racism, we will be deceiving ourselves and doing harm to the work if we don't, one, know it's a marathon that's going to require a lot of endurance, and two, knowing that part of endurance is rest, and it's something that cannot be excluded from the experience, because If you don't rest, you're tired before you get anywhere near progress, right? Like if you're so exhausted, you know, right now as you're moving your feet, right? Like if you are, especially if you're just doing this for the first time, if this is your first race, like, you know, sometimes you're tired and you only do your body harm if you keep going, even when your body says we're done here, right? And so the answer isn't quit the marathon and be like, just keep my entrance fee. Like that's not the answer. The answer is knowing when it's time to go from a run to a walk, when it's time to go from a walk to I need to stop by the side of the road. Same thing with this anti-racism work, with everything in our life, right? It's going to require rest and Sabbath and moments of joy. And Bernie can definitely speak, especially to the issue of this Sabbath, because I know that's something he treasures even in his Christian tradition, just like the role of stopping and God being a whole lot smarter than us. One of the things I teach often about Sabbath, I'm like, when we think about the Ten Commandments even, right? Among things like don't kill folks, don't, you know, sleep with somebody else's spouse, like God throws in rest. It's that important. Like, think about the kind of stuff that is like sitting among. It's that important because God is smarter than us and knows the folks he's formed are going to think like, I can keep doing this on my own. And what we're doing is playing God. And God won't allow it. And so that's why we can't even do this work without rest, because at some point we naturally get to the point where we stop.
I love that. I'm gonna come to Sabbath, but I want to put it in kind of in the context of, as we talk about this journey of addressing inequality, racial injustice, I have to just give the bow of respect and nod of gratefulness to past generations. My grandparents, my great grandparents, who, you know, often people ask me where I grew up and so forth. And I grew up in Arkansas, and I grew up attending an African American missionary Baptist church, yeah. Right? And so that whole Black experience of church tends to be very different from other expressions of church, right? Yeah. And, but what that represents is this long journey of endurance through, yes, the challenges that have been faced over the course of all these years. So the Black church experience was that rest. It was the refuge in the middle. It was where we, yes, came to rest and express joy and celebration and to exhale and to be built up, because on Sunday afternoon, you walk right back out into the battle, yes, to address all the same stuff that's been going on for hundreds and hundreds of years. So it goes without saying that our parents, our grandparents, our great grandparents had fewer opportunities for rest because they were it seemed so intense and overtly intense in those years that they were coming along. But the church was this incredible place of strengthening, yeah. And that's why the church service went so long, because they just needed more rest, y'all. They just need to worship more.
For real.
They just need to live in that space. It went from 8 in the morning to 8 at night because it was just this place, yeah, to recover from the journey and to be filled. So
yeah, when you said that made me think about just how Black church even started, the formation of Black church in America. So with Black is... We're not going to get into the difference. Black and African American. Yes, you can. If you're listening, can I use either of those words? Yes, they're both valid. But we are talking about a specific experience, right? We're talking about Black in terms of being African American. We're talking about the Black church in terms of being an African American. The formation of the Black church happens in what was called hush harbors, right? And so that's when, outside of the plantations, in the woods, right, they created these church spaces, these worship spaces, where they made the Bible their own, because they were being taught one thing, like, right? Yeah. So they're being taught, like, this is a tool to keep you in this system that's not working for you. But they would go out and sneak out and have these secret services in these hush harbors, right, where they made the word their own. And so it was both an act of resistance and an act of rest. Because they weren't working. They had worked all day. And so church was literally like rest and celebration was a part of their resistance. And that's a lesson for us, right? Because I love that you brought it back to the history, because that's where it started, right? In this act of rest and celebration. But also it reminds us that it's a relay. It's a unique kind of,
yes,
relay, right? It's not even like a short relay. it's like this long relay where other people have done their part, and now it's like, and I'm passing it on to you. And so if we miss that, and we just think that we have some sort of new formula that is going to be the secret sauce to change it all, we're going to get it wrong. Our part is to do as much as we can in the season that God has given us while we're here, right? The Bible talks about David did all that was assigned to him in his time, and then he died, right? And so all of us, we do all that's assigned to us in our time, and then we pass that baton on to somebody else. Black, white, all of us, right? Mm. When you're, as even white folks, teaching their children to be anti-racist, like passing that baton, do all that you can and then pass it on.
Yes.
So that just made me think that. I'm like, yes, they've been doing this. Rest is resistance.
And that you just hit on the crucial thing, the thing that's just been burning in my spirit for throughout this entire, multiple ordeals, the season that we're walking through with so many overt instances of just racial injustice and cruelty and brutality, is this idea that if we don't want to continue to perpetuate this normalcy and this everybody's okay with these things happening, it falls to Christ followers leading their children and discipling children in teaching. I mean, hate is taught and racism and bias and prejudice is taught. So if people are going to unlearn that, then they have to be taught something new. And if we use the word disciple and discipleship, and that's talking about how our kids learn the Bible and get baptized. And this is part of the Great Commandment. This is part of loving your neighbor. And it falls to parents. It falls to adults in the church who profess Christ to be Christ followers and committed to Christ. They have to take responsibility so that this is not, so that 10, 15, 20 years from now, we're not addressing this stuff. I mean, sin will always be here. And this isn't the responsibility. We cannot place the same expectations on the culture outside of the church. Mm-hmm. This is the church. This is different, you know, and church people are now adopting what the culture and they're politicizing a lot of the issues. They're like, no, you're the church. You're called to be, to love and to love your neighbor and to address systemic injustices and do so in an empathetic way and do so in such a way that demonstrates a profound love for your brothers and sisters. So it's the most frustrating thing to me. I use the word frustration rather than anger, but what makes me livid is to see people in the church totally renounce their Christian calling, essentially, right? They don't do it overtly, but they just by adopting the outside, they adopt a different posture and mentality that is totally unbiblical and totally unchristian. And it just is so painful to watch sometimes. So yeah, if we're going to change the future, if we don't want to see what we're seeing now, we have to teach the kids that are coming up.
Yeah. Because it's not a political statement. I mean, and you mentioned that word. It's not, this is the behavior, the action of anti-racism.
Yes.
In a political statement on either side. I don't care what party you are coming from. It's gospel. This is like the good news is, right, that Black Lives Matter.
Yes.
That's the news. That's reality. And so when you say that, you're not taking a side, you're not casting a vote. Like, you're just preaching the gospel whenever you say it and however you say it. And even thinking about the children, if you're not actively teaching anti-racism to your children, because anti-racism isn't a good idea, it's an action. And so if you're not raising anti-racist children, you are raising racist children.
Oh.
Period. Right? Like, those are choices we have. And so there is no sort of in between.
There's no middle ground.
Right. And so it's like, it's an actionable thing. What are you actively doing to pour into your children? Right? Yes. The same way, if you're not teaching your children any other part of the gospel, right? How do you expect them to know it? And it's not just enough to tell them. We know this with all the studies that we see Barna doing and all of these things, right? It's not enough. We're seeing in our generation. It was not enough for you to tell us all these things. If you don't see people living it out,
you gotta live it.
Older, we're just like, we're good. Because it just sounded like good news, but good news isn't just a word preached, it's a word lived, right? And so that's
Amen.
We have to be living it out. Otherwise your kids are like, I don't believe you. Just like everything else, right? That's why they touched the stove, because they didn't believe you when you said it was hot. They were like, let me
No, that's That's powerful. And we're looking for transformation too, right? And that's evidence of transformation when you actually walk it out. This, you know, these moments, I hope, aren't just, you know, people adjusting to the collective cry, you know, yeah. Oh, I better change my position because clearly the culture is saying, right. I'm anti-racist. I better adopt this new fad, this new,
right.
It's like the fanny pack coming back, right? I better throw on my fanny pack. No, this is transformation, heart, soul, very deep level, because something is happening and the truth is being revealed, and I want to be a part of truth. And especially, again, I keep going back to the church and those who claim affiliation with Christ, is that it's got to be something at a very heart level. And one of the things that you begin to realize when it is at a very deep heart level, people begin to do very difficult things. I come up from a background. I lived as an addict for years. Kendra, you know my story, maybe others don't, but one of the key things you know about an addict when they truly get it, all right, it's almost become cliche, is that they recognize that they got a problem.
That yeah.
First step, I realize I got a problem. And the same journey when we're becoming woke, if you will, to racial injustice and inequality, we recognize that I have a problem. And then the next big thing is, what am I going to do about it? What steps am I going to take? And they are extremely difficult, right? And as an addict, one of the first things I had to do is just ask for forgiveness from the people that I harmed the most.
That's
and
good.
To pursue that actively. I couldn't just say, it wasn't just between me and God. God, please forgive what I did to them. It was going directly to that person and saying, hey, I'm sorry. I broke your heart. I caused pain towards you. So in a sense, it's the same type of reaction we look for when there's a conversion that's happening in the spirit and the soul mm-hmm. of people who are becoming aware of the vast pain that, though they didn't directly cause it, but they may be part of perpetuating a system.
Yeah.
Or they're just guilty of remaining ignorant to the realities of what's going on with Black people. Yeah. So, yeah, you just want to see humble steps in the right direction. It's not perfection. This is relationship type stuff that's really messy and it's painful and it's not fun. But man, if we just move in the right direction,
yeah,
we'll see some powerful reconciliation happening, I think.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of people are asking kind of where to start. And I think you start here where you start anywhere else in your life, right? And I would say this is for every area of your life. That first part is asking God, like, search me. Like, is there anything in me that doesn't look like you? Like, even if you assume, especially if you assume that you've already got this kind of figured out. Don't even just ask God about racism. Be like, God, racism and anything else, right? Because all of these things are connected. And so it's like, God, is there anything in me that doesn't look like you? Dig it out. And I know it's going to hurt, but I know you love me enough to help me through it. Like, dig it out, uproot it, show it to me, right? And then when we get put in front of the mirror, as New Testament tells us, right? Don't turn away and forget what we saw. It's like, stay there. If you've ever cried in front of a mirror, I don't know if anybody's ever like looked at themselves in the mirror. Like, do that weird thing, that awkward thing that you do where you like, just like let the reality of what it is, like wash over you. And then that's the start. Like, that's not the whole marathon. That's just the part where you like tie your shoes and take off. That's the first part where you're like, this kind of hurts, right? That lactic acid is building up and your legs are burning. And you're like, wait a minute, I hadn't used this part of my thighs in years. Like, that part is what you're experiencing where it hurts. And you're like, and I can tell you now, having done a half marathon, that's the part where you're like, I think this is where I quit. I'm good. I'm really proud of myself for getting here. Right? Like that. But it's like, you're just getting started when you feel that first burn. And you're like, you have to keep going in order to get through it. And it's going to burn probably while you keep running. You're going to be okay. And like, that's this anti-racism journey. That's every journey, whatever it is that you're walking through, like, let it burn, like, let it hurt. It's fine. Like, those are, I promise you, I tell my husband, I laugh because I'm like, in my mind, what I tell myself when I'm hurting, like working out or whatever, I'm like, this is the fat crying. It's crying because it has to die. Like, that's might be a very girly thing, but I'm like, the fat is crying because it has to die. That's the same thing about whatever it is that's going on with you, where you're like, not fair, I have these other things happening in my life that I need to focus on. That's fine. It's all dying. That's just the feeling of death, and you're going to be fine. You can still do all of the things, but you're not going to be able to do it going back without rest.
Right.
If you got 6 days of work you got to do before you get to that rest. So this isn't, rest doesn't take away the work. It just means it's a part of it, right? So yeah.
You know, I'll confess this. I'm just on my personal journey of living out what it means to be an African-American male in the current culture, growing up in a context where it was predominantly African-American, but then kind of transitioning to a somewhat predominant white context in church and in predominantly white schools and seminary and so forth. I'll confess, I probably made white people feel way too comfortable. I think that's just part of my gifting. I think that's just the way I am. I feel comfortable around white people, and then white people feel really comfortable around me, right? And so, then you hear all of the different language, which I think through those growing up years, I didn't recognize just how significantly racist a lot of comments were. And we've all heard them, right? It's the, you're very articulate. You still don't sound like a black person, right? All these negative things, you know, that you hear sometimes, and I'm like, huh. I wouldn't confront it, or I wouldn't say anything about it. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's a discomfort and a disruption to this theme and this story of racism that we have to be willing to confront, or else people will never have that crisis of truth. I like to call it a crisis of truth. When you confront that falsehood and that lie, you give people an opportunity to face that crisis of truth. Then they got to kind of go, whoa, wait a second. Mm-hmm. And if we never give them that, and I got to repent of that. I need to make white people way more uncomfortable with me.
You hit a hard thing. I wasn't going to touch it with a 10-foot pole, but here we are. because this work is, it's not only long, but it's communal. And that's hard to do community with people who represent something that hurts you, right? Mm-hmm. So whiteness isn't just like the look of a person. It's a construct. It's a system. When we say whiteness, we're usually talking about a system. Mm-hmm. But people present as that system because they usually benefited from it or whatever. So that's hard, but it is communal. And we cannot do it, any of us. It can't be white folks just taking it and like, y'all take it and run it. We're tired. Go. Like, that won't work. And it won't work if black people keep trying to be like, well, we're just going to keep pulling up. You know, if some of you gather with us, we'll just keep trying to trek up the hill. Won't work. It has to be communal. Everybody has to be doing it. That's part of that relay, getting more people involved. And part of that, you know, what you said made me, the part that we don't often talk about is this communal work. Sometimes we have to do the work within ourselves too, even as black people.
Yes.
And that work is educating ourselves even, because especially those of us who have been in predominantly white spaces and had to, because there are certain even coping skills that you pick up. There are certain survival tactics that you pick up, right? Mm-hmm. So that you don't face the other things that we deal with in life, like rejection and all of these, right? And so you pick up these things that create internalized racism that you may not even know you have. Yep. And so it's even making sure we educate ourselves so that we can see, like, do I have some internalized racism, some messages I've taken in as a survival tactic, right?
Right.
That aren't healthy for me, that aren't helping in this journey. And I don't think we talk about that enough, but it's really important because, you know, some friends and I were just talking about, like, even every black person is not, it's like right now everybody's like looking for every black friend they have, like, talk with me about this. And it's like, but every black person is not necessarily an expert on anti-racism. Exactly. We're experts on our experience.
Right.
So that's where we're the experts. And so it's also like making sure as part of this communal journey, and I'll just step into it because I know that we have runners who listen and other people who listen to this that are Black as well, like, I would just encourage, like, hey, you know, also the work that you have to do in yourself is like, God, what is sort of internalized racism, hate for myself? It might not look like, you know, aggression against myself in the traditional sense, but what kind of messages have I received as a way to cope and survive that aren't helping me, that are actually doing harm to the work that has to be done?
Love it. Yeah. The coping thing. I think you're right.
Yeah.
In all through your college and your adolescent and college years, just socially, you're trying to cope with who you are and identity.
Yeah.
Then add your Blackness on top of that to whatever context you find yourself in. You want to have friends and you want to be liked and you want to be known.
Yeah.
So you probably cope with and accept things that you probably shouldn't have accepted along the way. And that's certainly true. So I love that counsel. I love that wisdom, is that there's work. Just because you're Black, you're still on the journey. That's a good thing. We're all on the journey, right?
Yeah, we're all responsible for our own trauma, right? The trauma that's been inflicted and the trauma that we've inflicted. And that's why I love this whole idea that this, if we do this anti-racism work seriously, it can really cross over into every area of our life.
It's holistic.
It's holistic. And so it's asking, like, God, what in me is sabotaging the work that you want to do in me? Because there are some things, right? Like, what is it that is in me that is working against your perfect will for my life? And racism always works against God's will for us, for all people. It always works against us. And if we think it hasn't affected us in some way, we're missing it. I'm telling you.
At the end of the day, reconciliation is about bringing opposing sides or opposite sides back together again. In order to do that, it demands a bit of a journey. You don't just automatically, you know, it's like when you're growing up and your little brother or sister punched you and then you punched them back and mom said, oh, y'all are fighting. Y'all need to apologize and hug each other. Well, you said it in the moment because mom was threatening to punish you, but you didn't mean it, right? That forgiveness took a little time. You had to get through some things. So there's a journey of reconciliation that we all have to be willing to participate in, and it doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah.
Relationships don't happen. I mean, don't repair overnight.
Yeah. And it's okay that it's hard.
It's okay.
That's why we need the rest. The image of iron sharpening iron, right? Yeah. As scripture talks about it, right? This work where we're improving each other. We throw that out like, yeah, get good friends, make community, iron sharpens iron, get around people who make you better. If you think about the imagery of that, so first of all, the Bible is so poetic. If you think about iron sharpening iron, first of all, it's loud.
Yep.
It sounds painful, like even like just sitting on it, like it's worse than nails across a chalkboard. Pieces are, as iron is sharpening iron, pieces are getting like shed off. Like that metal is being pulled off, right? Mm-hmm. And so you have to think, that's what God is calling us to. Hard, sharp, painful work where things are being shed off of us that we thought we needed, right? But we don't really serve a purpose until we are sharper. But we don't get sharper without that pain, without the discomfort, without the loud sound of things, right? Conversation. As we think about doing this work of sharpening each other, expect that it's going to be hard. Expect that in the sharpening, if you've ever, like, YouTube a video of somebody sharpening iron. Like, they can't do this. Sparks are flying and arms are moving. It's not a machine doing it. And you can't expect that your arm's not going to get tired. Your muscle's going to get stronger. There's the benefit. But at some point, you have to stop. You're not watching it. You're not watching, you know, an iron worker. You're not watching them do that. They don't do that for 12 hours a day. They're smart enough to know that they can do it. They give the metal a chance to rest and they come back to it. That's the work that we're doing, right? Mm-hmm. Six days of like, here we go, it's painful, it's hard, it's loud, everybody hates the way it sounds, right? And then you're like, okay,
but that seventh day,
when I look at this arm getting stronger, like I can do more work, right?
And so, it needs to recover too, right?
It has to recover.
Every runner knows, every endurance runner knows that you have to recover. And as you age, the recovery is even more important. But let's not talk about age right now. Let's just keep moving.
But that's a good point, right? Like, because some people are like, it's too late for me. It's not too late for you, right? Like, there's different work. The work looks different.
At you different don't get a pass because you're in your 70s, right?
You don't. I'm going to confess, I maybe told a friend, and I'm not even sure, should you put this on the podcast? But here we are again. I told a friend, I was like, you know, she was just sharing how there was some difficulty as she tried to confront her family with some of these issues. And she actually, a really close relationship in her family kind of seems severed right now because of it, just kind of facing these conversations. And I did say, I probably, as far as like grandma is concerned, at almost 90, she's going to heaven like that. She's been a racist for a century. The best you can do is just like, don't laugh at her jokes. Like, that is your activism with grandma. It looks different at every age. So at 90 years old, the best you can do is like, don't laugh at the jokes, excuse yourself from the room, explain to your kids in the car what grandma said is completely inappropriate. We do not tolerate that. We do not accept that that is not who we are. Yes. She was from a time where people accepted those, you know, inappropriate jokes, but it's not fine. And like, that shit, what your activism work looks like. Like, it's just different. And so you have to think about who you're talking to. You're not going to sit down with your three-year-old and watch the George Floyd video, right? Like, because it's not age appropriate. But you can say, when they ask why are people upset, hey, let me tell you why people are upset. Because, and then you explain, people are being mistreated, people are being harmed, people are losing their lives, right? Going to heaven way faster than they should because of the way that they look, right? And we have benefited from that.
Yeah.
Right? And that's a chance to like, kids are so smart. Like, that's a chance to have these hard conversations with kids, but there's something for everybody. Like, that whole thing, wherever you are in this age journey, don't discredit how smart you think your little children may or may not be, and don't discredit your act, like, you know,
those teachable moments. Yeah. And I literally was on vacation the last week or so, and my family is interracial, so my wife's side of the family, my wife is Mexican and white, and so her side of the family is white. We don't have contact with the Mexican part of her side of the family, but we do have with the white side. So we were visiting on family vacation, and we were literally it was an evening time. Everybody's around talking, having a great time, telling stories, playing games. And someone that's a relative used the term colored. They literally said this. And my children who understand what's going on, just pause for a second there, watch everyone's reaction. We just kind of let it keep going. But afterwards, we sort of debriefed. So how do we deal with that? Because this is in our own family. Do we go in on this and address it? Do we get angry? And we just kind of talk through it. But it was almost shocking for a moment there that we heard that. But I'm grateful my kids were there, my wife was there. We all kind of took it in, and then it came up later on. We were able to talk through it a bit. But I love, how you describe what that teachable moment looks like.
Yeah.
You are going to use it as a moment to teach and next generation. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not on how to have them. I mean, listen, scripture has something for every single thing we can do. Like, there's nothing that we can think of, and it's like, there's no scripture for that. There's scripture for it. And like, this is a place of wisdom. How do we even have these conversations, these hard conversations, right? In white families, how do you, maybe the opportunity is not at Thanksgiving. That's not it. But maybe at the table, right? But maybe it's when you hear that joke, it's pulling that person to the side. Wisdom might look like, hey, before we go, let me just pull you into the bedroom. Let's talk about, I heard something, and I know you probably don't think that it was much, but let me just share how this is not okay, right? So it doesn't look like causing a whole eruption, because then nobody's listening, everybody's mad, and y'all are hungry. See how that didn't work for you?
And y'all are hungry.
Right? So like the same thing, you know, with black families and families of color, when we hear something that sounds like some internalized racism showing up, it's kind of like, maybe the moment is not, you know, especially, I don't know if it's a stereotype, because this is a reality that at least I've lived. We are a passionate people. So the time may not be, I have learned this and lived it and suffered the hard way, in front of everybody, like this big correction, like, no, like that is some self-hate, but like that doesn't work. But maybe the moment, that wisdom and that looks the same way. Like, let's talk on the side. Let's talk afterwards, like away from everybody else. I know you probably didn't hear what it came across as, but let me share what I just heard and how, you know, what I'm hearing. So it's using wisdom. The Bible, we have been equipped. Like, I don't know anybody else's excuse. I can't speak to non-believers. But believers, if we are using the tool we have, we have been equipped.
So true. So true.
Thanks for running with us this week, team. Remember, as you set out for each run, each day, it is about endurance. Keep your pace, give yourself grace, and know that we go farther together. As you log more minutes or more miles, you are taking away both from the walk women and children bear each day to fetch dirty water. Every mile has a name, family, and a life attached to it. So do not grow weary in doing good, my friends. We've got this. If you enjoyed the podcast this week, please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and share. See you next week.